Advent, we continue on with the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth, which is the story that sort of is the opening chapter to the Nativity story. Last week we heard of Zechariah being told by an angel that Elizabeth and Zechariah, who had been childless to this point and were getting on in age, were going to have a child. And Zechariah sort of challenged the angel and was told he wouldn't speak now until that child would be born. So we hear from Luke 1. Now the time came for Elizabeth to give birth, and she bore a son. Her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown his great mercy to her, and they rejoiced with her. On the eighth day, they all came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him Zechariah after his father, but his mother said, "No, he is to be called John." They said to her, "None of your relatives has this name." Then they began motioning to his father to find out what name he wanted to give him. And he asked for a writing tablet and wrote, "His name is John." And all of them were amazed. Immediately, his mouth was opened and his tongue freed, and he began to speak, praising God. Fear came over all their neighbors, and all these things were talked about throughout the entire hill country of Judea. All who heard them pondered them and said, "What then will this child become?" For indeed, the hand of the Lord was with him. Then his father Zechariah was filled with the Holy Spirit and prophesied, "You, child, will be called the prophet of the Most High, for you will go before the people to prepare his ways, to give his people knowledge of salvation for the forgiveness of their sins. Because of the tender mercy of our God, the dawn from on high will break upon us to shine upon those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet, to guard our feet into the way of peace." The child grew and became strong in spirit, and he was in the wilderness until the day he appeared publicly to Israel. This is a word from our ancient and holy scriptures. Thanks be to God. So on this second Sunday of Advent, as the nights lengthen, we wait for some kind of mysterious miracle in a winter season that sometimes seems interminably long and dreary. We seek signs of hope. We take delight in just the tiniest of miracles of Christmas, even as we acknowledge that the world is not as it should be. Today, we dare to speak of peace. In a world rife with conflict, war, and fear, we have never seemed so far away from peace and so in need of it. We long for peace and for respite for those who have been destroyed by conflicts that seem so unnecessary, so unreasonable. Every day, our hearts are crushed by the violence and loss of life we see in the news. And sometimes I feel guilty for what I have while millions of people around the world are suffering from the horrors of war, starvation, deprivation, and degradation. People, even in our own country, are not immune to these conditions. It's not a bad thing in these circumstances to feel guilt, for we need to recognize our complicity in some of the situations that are going on. It compels us to explore how we can be instrumental in seeking healing and peace in the world. Why have we humans not figured out how to have peace? Wouldn't it seem reasonable that we would be able to figure out how to create conditions that promote life for people? Why do our leaders not work harder to protect their own people rather than being willing to send their citizens, particularly the young people, into war? Why have we not figured that out yet? It doesn't make a lot of sense to us. Why do we continue to engage in this kind of conflict? Well, it wouldn't make sense to us because we're not there. We're not in the heads of those leaders. And we are privileged to live in a fairly peaceful country, even as peace seems sometimes unattainable, and it seems to drift away as we see greater divisions taking place in our societies and in the world. So last week, as we started to explore the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth, which is the prologue to the nativity story we tell at Christmas, we saw that they had given up hope of ever having children, when suddenly that hope was revived when they received a promising message from Gabriel, the angel of God. And as Zechariah and Elizabeth revel in God's promise, the child is conceived and born. Zechariah, though, unable to speak because he had doubted God's promise, has waited months to speak. He is immersed in a silence that is so profound and complete for him that he is forced to listen. Listen to God, listen to himself, to those around him, because he failed to listen to God. And as the community gathers for the circumcision of his child and the naming of the baby, which is their tradition, there is conflict breaking out in his family. It happens everywhere. A debate breaks out among friends and neighbors and aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters, and everybody's going crazy, and they just assume that the baby's going to be named Zechariah, so that when the rabbi goes to do the circumcision and the naming of the child, they're all yelling Zechariah and Zechariah. And Elizabeth chimes in and says, "No, his name is John." "What? John? There's nobody in your family who's ever been called John. Why John?" She said, "No, his name is John." And they said to Zechariah, turn to Zechariah as if he can tell them, "What is his name?" They don't trust Elizabeth. "What is his name?" And Zechariah picks up a slate and he writes on it, "His name is John." And at that point, he got it. He had listened to God, and his lips and his tongue are loosened, and he is in that moment able to speak. Zechariah is speaking from a place of listening and silence. What he shares after that comes out of that place. It is a prophecy about his son and what his role is to be in the proclaiming of a future for his people. He says that John is going to be the one, the prophet who will go before the one who is to come, the one who will shine a light into the darkness and guide us in the way of peace. Light and peace. They go together, you know. For to have any peace in the world, the truth must be revealed. There must be an illumination of the truth. The truth, Jesus says, will set you free. And freedom is necessary for peace. There are two types of peace. One is that peace where there is an absence of conflict, a peace that sees everyone taking responsibility for their neighbors, whether that's your neighbor next door or the country that borders on yours. It's a peace that really does seem reasonable if we thought it through as human beings. If we are to have a good life in this world, we must care for our neighbors so there is no conflict, to make sure that relationships are good and solid and everyone is cared for, because that's the only circumstances under which we'll have peace, when everybody in the world feels safe. The other peace, though, is that inner peace that keeps us calm and steady and unruffled in times of turmoil. It's the peace that grounds us and keeps us balanced in all of life's circumstances. Remember the story of Jesus going out on the sea and his disciples are with him and he's sleeping and the big storm comes up and Jesus is sleeping and the disciples freak out like, we're going to drown, and Jesus is still sleeping. And he gets up and he says, peace. Peace be still. This is the peace we're talking about. That peace that can remain in that place even when there's turmoil all around us. This is the peace that Jesus offered. Zechariah, out of that deep sense of his own knowing, proclaimed after listening to God that his son would be a messenger of the one who offered peace. Peace beyond reason. You cannot think your way into this type of peace. It's not an emotion. It's not a thought. It is a state of being. It's something you must seek and find and live into. That's why it's hard to describe. You can't reason in that kind of peace. This week, the Oxford Dictionary revealed its word of the year. That the word of the year is intended to be a word or expression that reflects a defining theme for the past 12 months. So from the Oxford Dictionary, anybody know what the word is or the phrase was this year for the Oxford Dictionary? Anybody remember? Probably read it this week. Brain rot. Brain rot is the word or the phrase of the year for the Oxford Dictionary. And the Oxford Dictionary defines it as the supposed deterioration of a person's mental or intellectual state, especially viewed as the result of overconsumption of material, particularly online content, considered to be trivial or unchallenging. Brain rot occurs because we're consuming too much information that has no purpose. We have a problem. We are consuming an awful lot of content these days that has no worth for us living our lives. We sit and scroll through more and more content just because it's there. Anybody else do that besides me? When you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, when you're, yeah, see everybody doing it. They're scrolling through their social media, scrolling through. Man, it is you're going down a dark hole when you open up your, you know, and go this way and that way and every which direction. Guess what the result is? Brain rot. We are addicted to it. We passively consume material that leaves us with nothing that is helpful or worthwhile. And it doesn't require anything of us. It is the opposite of peace. Did you hear that? It's the opposite of peace when we do that. Because peace grounds us in the reality that we're in the moment, not when we're going chasing squirrels off someplace else. It makes us present to our lives right now and to everything and everyone around us. Peace doesn't distract us from the world. It grounds us squarely in our own lives and makes us receptive to everything that is going on in the moment without fear or judgment. Peace is generated in stillness and silence without distraction. In a contemplation of life as it is, it comes from facing what is in us without fear and overcoming it. To know peace, we actually have to set aside our distractions and useless information so that we can fully and know and experience that peace that comes from sitting in that silence and stillness and exploring what is going on in our own lives. And it's a knowing that we can access at all times, despite what is churning around us. And let me say this. Peace will never be possible in the world until people get the peace in themselves that passes all understanding. We start by cultivating that kind of peace within ourselves, the peace that Jesus came to offer. As dark as the world can get and as tied up in conflict as we can be, it is the lack of peace and darkness within ourselves that can do the most harm to us. Nobody can do more damage to my soul than I can do to myself. Yes, people can be cruel, can see mean things, be abusive and manipulative. They can. They can cause harm and reject and demean others, and they will. But I am best at doing that to myself. When we cultivate peace, we know exactly who we are, and we can accept ourselves for who we are as imperfect, damaged people who do unkind things, who are not on top of things all the time. And we can accept that when we're at peace, that we're perfectly imperfect human beings. Without that knowledge and that acknowledgement, we cannot heal if we do not know ourselves. Damaged, conflicted people who are not at their best will do damage to others and create conflict in the world. And the more power these damaged people have, the more damage they do to the world. Just look at the world and its deeply wounded and damaged leaders today, and you'll see why we're in the state we are. We need that peace that goes beyond reason. And we can only do this when we do the work, when we face our own imperfection and find ways to heal. To be at peace doesn't mean to ignore anything. In fact, the opposite. Peace embraces life and accepts it as it is. And then it allows healing. Peace always lives now in the present. You will never find it anywhere else, so you have to find it within you. It allows us to look at the world with our eyes wide open and love for all in our hearts. Peace doesn't pick sides, but sides with whoever needs help. Peace allows us to be okay, even when things around us are not okay. This Advent, as we ponder that peace that passes understanding, a peace beyond reason, I encourage you to seek it. Not out there, in here. Seek your own peace. And the one who offers it. Sit down inside yourself with Jesus. Have a really good conversation about your whole life. Everything. Do it in silence and stillness, which we don't get a lot today. We're getting a lot of brain rot. We're not getting a lot of peace. Let the Christ into your life and let him bring light and peace. Let him sit with you, because I guarantee that kind of work will change your life. Let's just take a few moments to breathe and reflect.